join KRVS for 2 hours of hardcore multi-generational roots rock reggae here on Jamon. Cecil here, booming the Ariites every Sunday night, live in studio from 9 to 11 p.m. The rebroadcast, Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m. Rasta Reggae Radio, doing it King David style. That's Jamon, here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table. It's so nice to have all of you with us today, and I know you have so many choices to make in your life, and you've chosen us. There's a lot of options people have, but to think that they choose us, that's a wonderful thought, huh?
Well, it is, and especially at such a busy time of year.
Talk about a busy time of year.
Your favorite time of the year.
This is one of my 12 favorite times of year.
12?
Yeah, this is, see how time flies, huh?
That's the time warp.
I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know what? I said, I can't believe how fast the year's flying by. I said, it's already like the end of September. So I just said, no, it's not. We're moving into Thanksgiving. You're still 2 months behind.
You're falling behind.
Anyway, y'all, we do want to welcome all of you and thank you so much for being here with us today. And, of course, begin by welcoming Michelle Yark, who once again is on her iPhone.
Well, you know, I'm working all the time. What can I say?
You're working all the time.
All the time.
A mind like me, a guy who grew up in the River Parish, it's a Louisiana weekend kind of multitask.
Well, there's a reason you can multitask.
Yeah. Mr. Riley. Mr. Riley Falls, my daddy. That's why I can multitask. Pick up your clothes, plus stir the white beans. Now, look, the tomatoes need plugging.
Is that where you learned how to manage?
Yeah, dictate, Mr. Riley. That's right. But anyway, well, how you doing? Huh?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Any big projects in your life going on?
Yes, I have a term paper due.
On what's
up? Profits.
On profit. So what did you say about me?
I'm sorry, I need to clarify. Old Testament profits. I don't think you're that old.
Dean Michelle has taken a course on
Old Testament.
Yeah, last class was
philosophy.
Philosophy. So you see, philosophy, Old Testament, and she's doing that just so she can keep up with me.
Oh,
I'm trying to save a soul.
Oh, okay, a savior,
a prophet here and a savior there. It is a nice,
not bad business.
Now you know why y'all have to be at the kitchen table. Anyway, across the glass wall, keeping us alive and well, everybody on the big satellite today. Of course, Dean Slama, how are you doing? Our engineer,
doing all. All right. Looking forward to the holiday season. Get me some of that cranberry sauce.
You're going to be cooking?
Oh, no, not me. Mama's going to be cooking.
You don't cook anything?
I do cook, but I don't cook cranberry sauce.
After today's show, I guarantee you will make the cranberry sauce Thanksgiving.
I ain't scared.
Don't be scared. The berries cooperate.
Let me tell you, cranberry sauce is now my specialty.
Ooh. Yeah, using one of my favorite recipes.
Of course, and it's requested. I get requests at the holiday season.
I created a cranberry sauce that I don't know why, since I own a food manufacturing plant, why I hadn't bottled that cranberry sauce. Cranberry sauce falls into the category of fruitcakes. You know, people cut up about them. They don't like them. I love cranberry sauce.
You get a bad rap.
You get a very bad rap. Exactly right. We're here to clear that up.
Could you put a little cranberry sauce on fruitcake?
Of course
you can. Like a little jelly?
Yeah, the Indians did.
They did.
We'll talk about that. Anyway, Michelle, I thought today you're always so good to me. You know, I mean, you're always thinking about me.
You
travel, you know, on your numerous vacations, you always bring me something back as a
gift.
Thank
you. Numerous vacations.
As you travel the world under the auspices and the disguise of work, you always bring me a little gift back. And it's so wonderful that I thought I'd give you a good gift today that's just absolutely loaded in vitamin C and antioxidant and all those good things, probably low in fat.
Are you trying to tell me something? Am I looking kind of peaked over here?
I've got a gift that's rich in color, bright burgundy.
Wine? Are you giving me wine?
Yeah, there's some wine in it. I've got this little jar that I'm giving you to take home for the holidays, and it is of the best. You know, every year around June, July, I get into the kitchen. I start doing my Dr. Shock work for the holiday as well, canning and jarring. And I got a beautiful, beautiful little gift for you today of my cranberry sauce.
It was probably the bad batch. Dean, it was probably the test batch that went awry.
You know, I made a batch since cranberries just got in here a couple of weeks ago, sort of the south.
What? You're not saying we grow them.
No, we don't grow them. I mean, we get them in. We get them in via 747. But I made my first batch of cranberry retief here.
Is that right?
Yep. 20 pounds of cranberries.
Come on.
That's right. Did you taste the slaw that I made?
Holy moly. You should have been here this week, Dean. You see, this is one of the advantages of being here during the week. It goes back to England. And one of the opportunities that presented itself, you know, on this food and beverage trek.
Sought after opportunity. Nothing's by accident.
Sought after because I
do work. She thinks you just happen on things.
It was divine. But anyway, slow gin. In England, they grow slow berries.
In the town of
Maybury.
Maybry, that's right.
Right, y'all were talking about.
Maybry, right outside of Oxford.
I think we just butchered the name a little bit.
That's it, Maybry, that's right.
They grow the slow berries.
The slow berries,
and
right.
So John decided he wanted to make a slow gin as well. Of course, we don't have slow berries, so...
We have fast berries.
Though. We have fast
we
berries
very
here.
Fast. Mm-hmm. So anyway, since the slow berry is red, I decided, well, raspberries, what's the difference, right? In Maybry, I happen to be able to sit with the proper folks to get the recipe.
Right.
I finagle a recipe, basically. Being a good Cajun I am, you start telling stories.
Guess who wrote it down?
And you walk away with the recipe.
No idea.
Why do you think she goes on the trip? She's the court reporter.
Describe.
Describe.
Yeah, so she described to me the... anyway, we wrote down the ancient recipe. Well, it does. It goes back to the medieval days.
Yeah.
It's ancient enough. My God.
I'm with you.
I mean, it's not like some of the stories we tell here about how old things are, but man, it's real. It goes back to the nights, you know. And I got the original recipe of the Maybry slow gin with the slow berry, and I came here and I duplicated the recipe using raspberries, and you tasted it.
It was delicious. Even I said he should market this because it was absolutely delicious. And I even asked him, do you have gin in there? Because... You could not taste it, which means it can really be rather potent, I'm sure.
You know, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have Donald Becknell on the show. You remember Donald?
Yeah.
Huh? The local winemaker.
That's exactly right.
And you know what? When he comes in, we can talk a deal together about this slow gin. But don't you think you're going to be on the deal because you were described by the recipe?
Look,
I don't think you're getting in three ways here.
I have an interest here. I definitely have an interest. Do you think you could make cranberry slow gin?
Cranberry slow would be great because it's a bit of berry. It's the same size. It's the same color. I bet it would be great. It's a tart. It's an astringent berry.
We have this on record that it was my idea.
Brilliant.
You are recording.
Good thinking.
Thank you.
Anyway, y'all, back to the topic of the big show today. And I don't know if you know that cranberry is one of America's native fruits. There's many, but the cranberry is only one of three wild fruits in America that's grown commercially. Did you know that?
The cranberry and what else? Grapes?
Concord grapes.
Uh-huh.
Bush blueberries.
There we go.
The bush blueberries that grow wild, the grape. And that's the only three of the wild fruit that are commercialized.
And we're talking about one of them today. We're talking about cranberries.
We're talking about one of them today, absolutely.
You know, cranberries have their roots in the Northeast.
No.
Here.
I didn't know
we
that.
We can't grow them here.
Have you ever seen
warm.
A commercial on television of anybody standing in a bog from
Never.
Louisiana and there was alligators swimming? No, their berries always grow where it's cold. Yeah, the north. Wow, indeed. Berries grow up north. Well,
but did you know it used to be called the craneberry?
Yeah, the craneberry, that's right.
The craneberry. That's what the colonial settlers, they had a lot of misspelling issues, but it was actually because...
No, they were originating a new language. They didn't have misspelling issues.
Well, I mean, they spoke English. You would have thought they could have...
Yeah, they spoke proper English from the town of Maybry. You know.
Too bad they didn't have proper spelling. It makes it difficult to read something. But anyway, craneberries, they had the small pink blossoms, you know,
in
that grow in the spring.
Yeah.
Anything, okay, that doesn't look like a crane. But the little white flowers kind of point downward, and it resembles the head of a crane. Craneberries. Instead of cranberries.
And that's where the name comes from.
That's right. But, you know, Native Americans actually...
They're the ones who popularized it.
Absolutely. And I know you always like to talk about pemmican.
I make pemmican, yeah. I do. I make pemmican from time to time just to kind of get a flavor for it and all that. Especially when we did the Wild Game Book, I made a couple of batches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ground the fruit.
You have to grind it up.
I used, I think it was figs at the time or something like that, just right before they got real mushy. And I just chopped them up because you need a kind of a hard berry. Well, like a cranberry, but cranberries are so tart that you have to mix it. The Indians mix it with maple syrup.
They did.
I saw a pemmican recipe one day for molasses, and I thought to myself, you have to have sugar for molasses. At least I thought you did. I could be wrong. Maybe you could get molasses some other kind of way. I'm not sure. But
general store.
Not during Indian days when they're making pemmican. But anyway, maple syrup, the fruit, and then diced or minced meat, as they call it, the minced meat of venison went into it. So they would preserve the venison with the sugar, and then they would kind of sun dry it, and then they'd roll it in the little balls, and it was a very, very high energy, high protein, obviously high energy, high protein food.
First energy bar.
That's exactly what it was. We need to ask our guests, do you think it's a myth that cranberries would use at the first Thanksgiving?
I think it was very possible that they could have been at the first Thanksgiving. I mean, they certainly had wild game.
I tell you what I was really shocked about. Yes. Cranberries were available. Pumpkins were available. Turkeys were available.
Squash.
There's some new debate going on right now about whether turkeys and venison were actually used at the first Thanksgiving, even though there's great record of it.
We were rewriting history again?
Yeah, rewriting history again.
They probably had lobsters, too.
They did. They had a lot of lobster, which was considered trash food, and they really hated it. The Union Army required cranberry jelly as part of the rations of every Northern soldier in the Civil War. Dean's laughing. Dean, what's funny about this, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the war looked
like. That's a good point. I was wondering if there was nutritional value to the cranberry sauce.
I think it made them march faster. They said, we got to get this thing over with. We eat cranberry sauce. But the Northern Army, they were required to eat cranberries, and that was part of their rations. Every soldier was given cranberry sauce as part of their rations. I thought that was very
interesting. Well, it is. It is interesting. And, you know, you were mentioning the cranberry bog. And so automatically we kind of think that cranberries grow in water. But
we were talking about that yesterday. I said bog, you know, we call it a swamp here.
We have all these swamps and marshes. We're probably missing agricultural opportunities.
Well, except that you need 6 months of ice tundra to go ahead and set the seed.
There's probably something else
we could do. In the refrigerator or freezer. Yeah.
I'm just saying. But our guest today is actually from the Northeast, and he's going to talk to us about harvesting berries and talking about how they grow, because the berries don't actually grow in the water. I'm just going to leave it at that.
But they harvest it in the water, right?
Well, there are two harvesting methods.
Oh.
There's a dry harvest.
Well, there's a wet harvest. Well, we in the South have always been taught that you had to harvest berries in water.
That's because you like to wear waders. Let's just get down to it.
And by the way, we call them hip boots. Anyway, y'all, we don't have to tell you what we're talking about. We're talking about one of the holiday's greatest side dishes and one that has been, like fruitcake, pushed off to the corner of the table. But we're elevating it to the center platter today, so don't you dare go anywhere. We'll be back in a minute.
Cranberry kisses and strawberry hugs. I can't get them off my mind. We'd start out picking berries on a Sunday afternoon. Down by the hollow in the glen, we'd still be picking berries by the light of the moon. We'd pick a bit and kiss a bit and pick and kiss again. Oh, those cranberry kisses, strawberry hugs, going back to get some more. For with those cranberry kisses and strawberry hugs, life will be the berries, just a bowl of cherries with the one that I adore.
Greetings, I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM, KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette,
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
Way out of place. Are we gonna tell them what we tell them every time before? They won't leave us alone. They won't have to come home. We've been busy making berries and picking wild mountain berries. We're picking wild mountain berries. That's our excuse every time that we've been busy making berries.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And it's so nice to have all of you with us today as we talk about cranberries. And no, we're not trying to grow them in Louisiana. It's not because it's not cold enough here. We not have enough time under cold weather, Michelle. We cannot find a bog around.
We can't use one of those marshes or swamps.
No. You need that hard bottom that was created by the glaciers over here. This is just created by alligator tails swapping around. The swamp is kind of digging the holes, you know.
Maybe that could be a good harvesting method.
Absolutely. Anyway, y'all, no Thanksgiving in America would be complete without a good compote dish of numerous different types of cranberries. Sauces, and I have to tell you, these creative cooks and these creative chefs all over the country are doing things with cranberries we couldn't even imagine many years ago when we used to wag the bottom out of that can and push it out the other side. But to have some good fresh cranberries now and have all these great recipes, like some of them that I've made.
Are you talking about my cranberry sauce recipe?
No, I'm talking about my cranberry sauce recipe you've stolen. Anyway, y'all, we thank you so much for being here with us, and we have just a great guest. You know, it's always important, Dan, I have to tell you, you know, one of the things that makes our show one of the most listened to shows in the South is that we believe in accuracy and authenticity, right?
That's exactly right.
And sometimes we hit it 1 out of 10.
And we've got the guest today.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to him
about my cranberry ratifi I'm making.
As we prepare for the Thanksgiving feast, and we've been talking about cranberries, we decided to go to the source.
Well, naturally, that's our motto.
We went straight to Massachusetts, 10 miles from Plymouth. Our guest today comes straight from the cranberry bogs of Massachusetts, Mayflower cranberries. Thank you very much.
That was fantastic.
Jeff LaFleur from Plimpton, Massachusetts. Welcome to Stirring It Up. And with a name like LaFleur, you have to have a Louisiana connection, not necessarily Foles cousin connection.
So, Jeff, how are you doing?
I am really excited this morning because now I have a national radio personality cousin.
All right. But I have to confess, by national standards, I'm not what you would consider wealthy or anything, but by Louisiana, I'm doing pretty doggone good.
Jeff, I know is us French Canadians did not come over on the Mayflower.
Now, Jeff, I know at LaFleur, your family had to walk from Nova Scotia. Y'all had to walk from that wonderful Grand Prix across Maine and down into Massachusetts. I'm sure it happened. Are you one of the Cajun exiles?
The funny part about it, LaFleur is probably the only part of my name that's truly French, because the rest of me is English, Irish, Portuguese, Italian.
That's all right. We love
true
all
American.
In other words, you're a true mix, huh?
He's a Creole.
He's a Creole. That's right. A Creole. That's what he is. A mixture. A Creola, right? Anyway, it really is nice to have you, and I know you're busy. You just finished a cranberry harvest?
Yeah, we just finished harvesting our farm yesterday. It was our last day, so it was an exciting day for us, and we finished up about 3 weeks of harvest.
Our listeners are sitting at the edge of their chair saying, okay, we want to find out about that great cranberry sauce recipe that John's going to give us right now. But I have to know a little bit of your cranberry history. Have you been in it? Is it a family affair, or how did you get into the business?
I have worked in the industry for about 20 years, but I'm probably one of the real unique parts of this industry, whereas I'm a newbie as far as actually owning a farm. My wife and I purchased this farm about 4 years ago from friends of ours who were retiring, and they decided to move from New England to New Mexico. So quite a difference in change in climate. So we were really fortunate to be able to acquire the farm. And the farm goes back to the late 1800s and was the first commercial cranberry farm in the town of Plimpton, Massachusetts. And we're excited to be able to continue its tradition of producing America's number one healthy berry.
That's a good tag right there, right, huh?
America's number one healthy berry, and it is. And, Jeff, there's a great cranberry history in that area where you are.
Cranberry production began commercially in this region back in the early 1800s on Cape Cod. today, Massachusetts produces about 28% of the total U.S. cranberry crop. Many of our farms go back well 200 years, and some of them are four or five generations in the same family.
I think just a couple of weeks ago, we had a farmer who had just done apple orchards, and him and his wife just decided to buy a farm. He had no background in it or experience. And here, Jeff and his wife buying a cranberry farm from friends. It's a trend getting back to the farm in America, and we're really excited, so excited about that. We certainly don't know a lot about growing them here, but we certainly know a lot about eating them here. So we're kind of in cranberry 101 for our listeners in the South today. And most of us think that from commercials we see on TV and everything else that cranberries have to grow in water, that people out there, as we do shrimping and crabbing and crawfishing, that that's the way to do in berries. But tell us a little bit about the growing and the harvesting methods.
Well, cranberries are an evergreen vine that grows horizontal along the soil and just sends a very short upright, about 4 to 6 inches tall. So it's a very low growing plant that grows in bog areas, but is dry 90% of the year. The only time we actually flood the bogs is for wet harvest, which is the most visible and certainly the most beautiful time of year here. And then again in the wintertime, we'll flood the bogs again to protect the vines from the cold New England temperatures. So most of the time, the bogs are dry. So you're absolutely right. A lot of people think they grow underwater, but that is only because of the harvest process and being so visible with that crimson red fruit floating on that crystal blue water and creating a really neat postcard photo.
Oh my God, it is without a doubt a beautiful scene. And of course, that's one of the things that really bring in the fall and holiday season, I guess, for the rest of the country is the sight of the fresh cranberries in the store. Has cranberries just always been that big of a part of the food of your area of the country, or is it something that farmers have started to export to the rest of us in recent times?
Well, cranberries were here certainly long before the Pilgrims arrived. Native Americans have used them for food and medicine and for dyes. The actual use of the berries expanded dramatically in the 1960s when we went from the traditional fresh cranberries and cranberry sauce into a juice market, started blending it. Ocean Spray, who is a farmer co-op, and we're members of the Ocean Spray Co-op, really did a great job in developing new products to attract consumers, not just here domestically, but worldwide. A large part of that growth of these new products has been in the area of dried cranberries and the Crazen product, which has been used as an ingredient. As I tell folks, you can find cranberries today in almost every single aisle of the supermarket as an ingredient. That's pretty exciting because it really has provided new ways to deliver this product to consumers and almost anything that they like to consume and enjoy. Today, it's a baked good. It's in the vegetables. It's in dairy. It's in trail mixes and cereals. And you name it, and we can cran it.
I love that. Well, you know, when we think about cranberries, we kind of think of only a cranberry, one thing. But there are actually many varieties of cranberries. Can you kind of enlighten us on that?
That's actually something a little known secret in our industry is the fact that there are about 100 different varieties of cranberries. Many of them are selections from the wild that date back to the 1800s. But today we're seeing new varieties of cranberries from traditional crossbreeding of some of those to be more productive varieties, disease resistant and such. But one of the things that we don't do is we actually don't market cranberries by variety. They're really all combined into making ultimately our finished products. Particularly with dried cranberries, we look for a larger berry, a variety called Stevens, which is a variety that's very productive. But then fresh fruit that you'll oftentimes find in the supermarkets from this time of year through the holiday season are either Howes or early black varieties, which are native varieties to this region and began cultivation in the 1800s, and they're a great fresh fruit quality product.
Do you grow the early blacks?
We grow Howes, early blacks, Stevens, and another variety called Whiting Randalls, which is a variety discovered here on our farm in the 1800s. We're excited to have something like that, an heirloom piece of cranberries here on the farm, but it is something that we're proud of, the fact that the heritage of this farm and this region and what it means to the community, and particularly the open space and vistas that it creates. It's a beautiful site, and I'm extremely fortunate to be able to live right here on the farm and on the bog.
And the vines are kind of everlasting. I mean, it's not like you have to replant every year. Did I understand that correctly?
That is correct. Some of the vines that we have here on the farm are the original plantings going back well over 120 years. So it's a vine that, with proper care, can last continuously for a long time. The only reason why we would rip them up and plant new vines is maybe to change variety to be more productive, or in case you were ever, we had a very serious infestation of weeds or some other insect or disease issue that forced us to renovate our bog.
You really got my attention a minute ago, because even though as a chef I realize all the multiple uses of the berry, and we've seen the growth of it certainly from the beverages all the way certainly to the dried fruit and candied fruit and you name it, I'm just wondering about the rapid growth of production of that berry, because it seems that, at least in the mind of the Southerner, let me put it that way, that cranberries were just kind of this little small accidental business that folks had. But it seems that there's this huge industry out there supplying berries. Is this an annual event? How does the year shape up to get that volume of berries? And what is the volume that's going into production to fill the American market or international market?
Certainly, U.S. cranberry production has grown quite a bit in the last decade, and a large part of that growth is actually taking place in Wisconsin. Massachusetts had been the number one producer of cranberries up until about 1996, and then Wisconsin surpassed us in production, and they now produce about 55-56% of the total U.S. cranberry crop. You're looking at a region that's grown tremendously, mostly because of the fact that it's an agriculturally oriented state from a landscape perspective and an economy perspective. So they have the land resources to be able to expand and plant many of these new varieties. We're also seeing growth in Quebec, Canada, a large cranberry growing region that is producing up there. Massachusetts is still doing very well. This year we'll probably produce close to 2 million barrels of cranberries, and a barrel weighs 100 pounds. We harvest cranberries once a year. We get one crop, but all of this crop that comes in is either turned into concentrate or frozen whole fruit that can then further be processed into the final products of sweetened, dried, craisins, juice, or even today, purees and powders in the many new products that are being introduced. The U.S. cranberry crop is able to supply a worldwide market just with one harvest a year.
And are y'all seeing a sustained growth in the industry? I mean, is it growing every single year to match the market demand?
Well, demand certainly is growing, mostly at this point in international markets. The U.S. demand has been pretty flat the last couple of years, but we're seeing a lot of growth in international markets. 10 years ago, only about 10% of the total U.S. cranberry crop is exported. Today, it's upwards of 30%.
Wow.
So we're seeing really the international appeal for this fruit grow tremendously. And every country is different. Germany has been seeing a lot of growth in juice areas. The UK has been very great in the dried cranberry products. Japan likes the powders and dries that can be used in baked goods. So every country is a little different with the types of products that they use to fit the palate of the consumers in that country. But definitely growth internationally has been a large part of our continued growth here in the U.S.
Anything in wine or alcoholic beverages made with the berry? Because, I mean, so many of our berries are turned into wine.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of local wineries that make cranberry wines or cranberry infused wines. Here in Massachusetts, we have a couple wineries, one on the Cape and one in Western Mass, that they continuously tell me it's their number one seller because of the fact that certainly a lot of tourists come to the region to vacation on the Cape or see the New England foliage, and they want to take home something that is part of this region, and cranberry wines has been a very popular addition to that.
Well, good.
In this season, in this harvest season, we've been talking a fair amount about agritourism, and certainly Mayflower Cranberries is no exception. Tell us about some of the activities that you have on the farm there, because as I understand it, you have harvest tours and particularly that Be the Grower experience, which I want to be a part of. So tell us a little bit about all that.
Well, we do something pretty unique that most other growers don't do. We allow our visitors to come to the farm to actually put on waders, get in the bog, and participate in the harvest. And it's really an exciting opportunity for folks to come out and really see what it's like to produce this little red berry and help bring in the crop. And we have so many folks that come from throughout the United States and even international visitors. This year we had visitors from England and Germany and Italy. And so many of the visitors tell me they want to be just like those two guys on TV. So, yeah, it's really is an exciting opportunity for folks to come out and partake in the harvest. And I got to tell you, one of my favorite stories this year, we ran about 80 people through our Be the Grower experience. And we really pride ourselves on specializing on small, intimate visits with folks coming out. And really what we're selling is the farm. We don't have the fancy rides or anything of that nature. We're not trying to create Disney World. We want people to enjoy Mother Nature here on the farm and participate in it. But one of the most exciting things that happened this year is I had this young couple come up from Pennsylvania, and the young man gave me his camera and said, no matter what happens, just keep taking photos, which I thought was kind of an odd statement. The next thing I know, he's in a rack of berries with the beautiful fruit floating around him. He gets down on one knee and pulls out a ring and gets engaged right there. So it was a lot of fun, and I got to tell you, I don't know who was more nervous, her or I, because I was nervous he was going to drop the ring in the bog.
Cranberries, like my favorite fruitcake, have certainly gotten a bad rap. Coming out of the can and thought about as only something that went on a Thanksgiving or holiday table, but we know that's not true. I don't know if you're a cook or like to cook, but what's your favorite presentation using cranberries?
One of my favorite things, and I always tell folks, this is a very popular question I got. I said, I always have a gallon of cranberry juice cocktail in the refrigerator. But certainly using craisins, the dried cranberries, in salads is one of my favorites. I throw them in cereals. I throw them in on top of a salad, mix it in with oatmeal and so forth in the morning. So really, just because of the fact that you can just throw it in almost anything that we eat, really makes for some great tangy taste to our food.
Of all the people who have come your way, I don't know if you have a particular story about the strangest or the most interesting presentation or preparation that people have told you, this is what I do with my cranberries. Do you have any of those that anybody's ever said, what? What did you do with them?
It's funny you say that, because when I first started working in the industry, I had the opportunity to be a judge in a cranberry cooking contest. and so that certainly gave me the opportunity to experience some pretty strange food. And one of the things that was pretty unique was somebody took cranberries and turned it into a pasta sauce and put it over a linguine, and that was pretty unique.
Jeff, anyway, it's been great having you on the show today, and we thank you so much for the great work that you're doing to spread the gospel of one of America's great dishes, of course, or one of the great ingredients. And, of course, we on this show, Starting It Up, really appreciate the farmer who works so diligently to bring food and great regional products to the world. And y'all, we will have Jeff's information in Mayflower cranberries on our website. If you go to www.jfalls.com. And Jeff, if you ever get down to Louisiana, you have a place to stay. We do have a little place that you can bed down in if you want. We're close to New Orleans. We're right in the heart of Cajun country. All of those alligator shows and all of those wonderful swampland pictures you see, we're right in the middle of all of it right here. And we grow sugar and we turn it into everything but cranberries. but we help sweeten your cranberries.
Well, you know, and the harvest is over now, so they can come for a visit.
That's exactly right.
Of course, you know, he does blueberries too.
Well, that's all right. I love blueberries.
We're going to have to talk to Jeff during blueberry season.
Yeah, Jeff's got to be our guest. Jeff, do come by and see us. And if we're ever in your area, which I know we will be because Michelle takes vacations often.
Oh.
So we'll probably come on up and do a little cranberry tour ourselves and maybe bring a microphone with us. We appreciate
that. That would be awesome.
So
and I'll make sure I won't give you the leaky waiters.
Thank you so much, Jeff. All right, everybody, we'll be back in just a second, so don't you dare go anywhere. Sometimes we do give out a recipe on this show.
Urban landscapes often have their history, their character, their pride and their identity all channeled through a river. On the Thistle and Shamrock, hear the flow of music from the riverbanks as traditional and contemporary song celebrates rivers as sources of life and timeless inspiration.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Thank you. Francomix avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we have Alvin Youngblood Hart at the 2012 Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival. Then we'll head to the 2011 King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, Arkansas, to hear from Sterling Billingsley. That plus our feature host, the late Jerry Wexler, continues his series On the Record. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller les dimanches matins? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud, tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h. On va charrer en français, écouter la musique en français et boire une petite tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
Bush as I was strolling home one day, and somehow it brought back the bygone days of when you and I were berry picking many years ago in a little county not so far away. How well I do remember the day when we first met. It leaves a picture in my mind I never can forget. We were picking berries at old Aunt Mary's when I picked a blushing bride. As we
all right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. We changed the name.
That's us.
Food and culture, that's us. 16
Absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely.
You know pretty soon we'll be doing our 1,000 shows, did I tell you?
1,000
shows. Right? Michelle was just last week, I think it was, you given that new title of...
Yeah, after 16 years, I got a promotion.
She got a promotion? She's not a...
yeah, the co-host.
She's a co-host.
I got to get new business cards.
No. Just scratch out. Or you can write just co in the front of...
Well, we do have a Facebook page.
Yeah, well, I
we
didn't
do.
Know.
We'd like for everybody to go on there and let us know what you're thinking, if it's good. Maybe share a recipe.
How could it not be good?
Facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that's stirring without the G. Stirring it up.
S-T-I-R-R-I-N. I always say backslash, but it's not a backslash.
It's not. It's a slash.
It's a slash.
Forward slash. On the Facebook, we got a comment.
We got a comment. Wow.
In regards to our show on orbs, on pumpkins.
Yeah, on orbs, yeah.
Patrick says, well, I just use squash as a veggie for meatloaf. And he says he really likes the show. And he says, John, you remind him of his father. So,
see what I'm talking about? I'm a father figure, Michelle. You see, and you always looking down on me. You see what I'm talking about? You always, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, he's not a father figure. Look, on Facebook, this guy's complimenting me on the fact that I stand out as a father figure. What else did he say?
I think he said, and I love Michelle. I think that was his next line. And thank goodness y'all got Dean. I think that's what he said.
Is that what he was?
He said all that and then something about spicy food. He's really into spicy food.
We got a lot of action when we had our chef friend on from England. We got a lot of noise about that. Well, you know, we encourage you to comment on the show, but we more importantly encourage you to send us topics of interest. Let us know, because when you don't really know anything about anything, you can talk about anything, because you know what I mean, Michelle? It's not like we're an expert on anything, so if somebody wants to talk about, like, slow jet, we can talk about it. If they want to talk about cranberries, we fall right into the bar.
That's it.
It's not like we're an expert that we need to kind of focus on one topic, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, thankfully, we bring experts in, so well, there's mean, a little what authenticity I mean. To what we speak
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You said it so much better than I did.
We did have somebody actually comment with some show suggestions. David Hubble suggests maybe a show on okra. He's interested in a show maybe on pineapple. And he was talking about the gardens of Valcourt-Aime.
Valcourt-Aime, yeah, absolutely right there, yeah. That would be a great topic.
It would.
The gardens of Valcourt-Aime. Too bad those gardens aren't open.
Yeah, I know.
that's another thing. When Donald Becknell, the winemaker, comes in to do our show, I'm excited about him. You know, when's he coming
in?
Anyway?
He's going to be here in just a couple weeks.
Mark your calendar. Tell everybody on Facebook, Donald Becknell is going to be here. We're going to talk about Louisiana wines, but we're going to talk about Valcarame's Gardens, because I bet he grew wine.
I'm sure he did. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what about books from the library, Michelle? Anything you want to encourage people to add to their library? Because every single week, one of our topics is to make sure that people build their culinary library, and they wonder, where do you get all these fun facts from? Where do you get all these interesting recipes from? Well, we get them from our culinary library. We have a nice library.
We do.
And we encourage people to buy a book and put it on your shelf, and that way you will slowly, day by day, week by week. And in fact, pretty soon, if you're like me, you'd have 1,000 books, because I can buy a book every show.
Well, I do have a little book today called Cranberries and How to Cook Them. Now, what's interesting is that this was published by the American Cranberry Exchange back in 1938. And, you know, back in the day, these little vintage books were created, and it could have been for a particular product that they were trying to produce or trying to give homemakers at the time ideas of how to use that product, how to use that fruit, how to use that vegetable.
Unique products, yeah.
A lot of the large companies did the same thing with baked beans or Crisco or Spam. I'm not talking about email. I'm talking about canned product. That they would do these little cookbooks to give you ideas of what to do with the product. So this week, Cranberries and How to Cook Them, it's only 22 pages, but it's packed with unique recipes. Of course, they have the cranberry sauce, but they have baked cranberries and spiced cranberries and cranberry pineapple relish for David Hubble, even cranberry icebox cake. So just kind of an interesting little piece of Americana to add to the culinary library. I have a couple of interesting little books like that. So it's Cranberries and How to Cook Them from 1938, published by the American Cranberry Exchange, and we'll include that information on our website.
Yeah, and if you go to our website, jfalls.com, if you click on radio show, not only can you hear the radio show, it streams all over the world every week, but also we have our facts and figures, all of our guest information, all of the books we talk about, the recipes, everything is right there. And you know, you really hit one of my heartstrings when you said Spam a while ago. Yeah, because
somehow I knew I would.
Yeah, because my dad, you know, we only had one store in St. James where I grew up, and it was Grand Yards. We had Grand Yards store, and my dad would go there and he'd buy our food, you know. We weren't wealthy, so to speak. We were commoners.
Mm-hmm.
And Daddy, for years, he tricked us into believing that Spam was ribeye steak. we didn't know it came in a can. He would just buy those cans, open them up, and slice them into eight, and he'd put them on a plate with little green beans. Here's y'all ribeyes. We didn't know. So when I went to college, or when I went to Nichols, I said, oh, look, ribeyes. It was Spam. And you know, my good friend, you remember I talk all the time about Louis Zatmary, the great.
Yeah.
Louis Zatmary was an unbelievable chef. He escaped all the persecution of the Jews by the Germans in World War II. He was from Hungary, and he and his wife and two children were trying to escape across the border to get out of the country, and his wife and two children were captured and killed. He got away and made his way aboard a ship to America. In the 40s, I mean, he makes his way to New York. And Louis Zatmary ended up being one of America's top chefs. He also, Michelle, had a PhD in philosophy.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that?
I did not.
As a young man, he had studied to be a chef, but then became a PhD and was teaching at either Budapest or somewhere like that. He was a doctor of philosophy. Then when he escaped to America, not really speaking the language well and all of that, he became a cook again.
Wow.
Trying to get back on his feet in New York City. So he was working among the slumlords of New York in little diners, and cooking got back into his blood, and he never, ever went back to the classroom and became one of the great, great chefs of the world, Louis Zatmary. He opened a restaurant in Chicago eventually called the Chicago Bakery. And the Chicago Bakery was not a bake shop. It was one of the finest restaurants in the world. But what made Louis Zatmary so famous is that he created one of the largest culinary collections ever to be amassed in the world. As you well know, you've been to that collection of Johnson & Wales. Everything from the baker's rings of Pompeii to the cannibal skull bowls of Borneo to the published recipes of every cook that ever worked for every president, from Napoleon Bonaparte's Total Kitchen, and on and on and on and on. his culinary collection was absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. And I mention him at this point because he was hired by Sears and Roebuck at the time. He was hired by most of the early canning companies, the American Canning Company and all of that, to write recipes in little book form to tell people how to use their product. Because remember, in the 1940s and early 50s after the war, there was just a revolution about with all these processed foods and new gadgets and stoves and ranges and electrical appliances, and they needed somebody to tell people how to use them. Mm-hmm. And being a famous cook in Chicago, Sears, where they had their home office in Chicago, hired Louis Zatmer because he was such an intellectual, he could instruct people to use things. Mm-hmm. And when you were mentioning just out publishing these little books on vegetables and all that, as you just mentioned, cranberries, I guarantee you Louis Zatmer was right in the middle of that. Today, his culinary collection, which he had a hard time donating, over 1 million pieces. Every menu of every inauguration from George Washington he had.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's all in the Zatmer Library at Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island. So if you're ever there, and I'm lucky to have about 20 or 30 of his little pamphlet books signed by him to me, because he and I were very good friends. I have so much of his little memorabilia with his signature on it, and he always signed it. He'd write his name, Louis Zatmer, and as he made the S and the H, he turned it into a chef hat. He always had a chef hat in his signature. Anyway, just another little piece of Americana, as you would say. St. James, we say Americana. You ready for a recipe, Michelle?
Yeah.
What recipe do you want? I have options today. Let me let Dean pick out the recipe today. I have roasted Brussels sprouts with cranberry brown butter. That's number one. Don't make your decision too fast. Secondly, carrot zucchini and cranberry quick bread. These are all original recipes from the Falls Library.
Ooh, I like that.
And then, of course, a spiced cranberry and kumquat sauce with Zinfandel.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the sauce.
I assure you, I want this to be, this isn't a dare, this is a challenge to you.
All right.
I want you to make this sauce for your family Thanksgiving. I want you to bring the cranberry sauce, and everybody's going to say, my God, the first thing you ever did is the best sauce we ever ate. Huh? How would you like to have that? Spiced cranberry and kumquat sauce with Zinfandel. Y'all, it will be on our website. You want to download this, and now's the time to do it, all the way from today through Christmas and New Year's. And Réveillon, you can have this sauce.
And we'll put all these recipes on there.
Absolutely, every one of them.
Dean, if you would like to do the Brussels sprouts, it'll be on there.
Brussels sprouts is cabbage with a college diploma.
Really?
It's a Brussels sprout, yeah.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Now, Dean, this is only going to take 30 minutes. It's going to make 6 cups. We can also jar it, put it in one of those little nice jars, and drop the jar into a pot of boiling water for 18 minutes, and you've totally jarred your relish, and you can put it off to the side, even though I've never had any left to jar myself. Everybody eats it up. But okay, should you have some folks who are not aficionados of cranberry sauce, you can jar it. We're going to begin with 2 12-ounce bags of fresh cranberries. You can buy them in all the stores. 2 12-ounce bags of fresh cranberries. Then you're going to take 12 kumquats, which are on all the trees of the South right now, but also in all of the stores. That's a little oranges, right, Michelle?
Right.
A little bit of small oranges?
Mm-hmm. You want to seed them before
you're going to seed them, absolutely. You're going to seed them, and then you're going to thinly slice them into coin shapes, but keep the peels on. Rinse the cranberries off. You're going to measure out 1 1/3 cups of Zinfandel. And, of course, you can use any red wine. You can use a little Pinot in there. It's a kind of a bigger red, so you can use that. 2 cups of sugar, which will balance the tartness of the berries, right? You're going to have 2 12-ounce bags of cranberries, so you need 2 cups of sugar. And, of course, we're in the sugar empires here in the South. 1 cup of brown sugar packed, not half cup, packed brown sugar. Mm-hmm. That's going to give you that nice cane syrup molasses-y finish, right? 6 whole cloves. Mm. 6 whole allspice,
ooh,
3 cinnamon sticks, and 1 strip of orange peel. That's it. That's all the ingredients available in your local stores, very inexpensively, this time of year. You're going to combine all of the ingredients in a pot except the cranberries and the kumquats, which means that into that thing you're going to throw the Zinfandel, this is your liquid. You're going to melt the sugars, the white and brown sugar, into it, and then you're going to put your spice and your orange peel.
I have a tip. The cloves you just push those little cloves into the orange peel so that they're easier to dig out when you have to remove it.
That's exactly right. I would put it in a little muslin bag. I wanted a little.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. But you can stick it in that orange peel.
Stick it in orange peel. That's a good idea.
Now, you said cinnamon sticks?
Cinnamon sticks.
The whole stick. Just throw it in there.
No, the whole stick. Just throw it down in there. It's easy to get out, too, because it's a big stick in your sauce. And you can say, what's that stick? You say, that's my cinnamon. Get it out of there. Plus, you can rinse it, dry it off, and you can use it again. You don't throw away cinnamon sticks. So we're going to combine all the ingredients. So you're going to put this infidel, the sugar, the clove, the allspice, the cinnamon sticks, and one strip of orange peel that you can, in fact, push the little cloves into, and they're going to be great. You're going to bring it to a rolling boil. Then you're going to reduce it to medium. And once all the sugars are dissolved and the mixture is reduced to about 1.5 cups, it's going to take about 10, 12 minutes over that high fire. You're going to strain, Michelle, all of this stuff out. And then you're going to return it to the pot, and you're going to add the cranberries and the kumquats to the syrup, and you're going to put it back on the stove, and you're going to stir it gently, and the minute it comes to a boil, the cranberries are going to start to pop open.
Mm-hmm. You can hear them.
Yeah, in the Zinfandel syrup. And, of course, that orange peel is really flavored. That Zinfandel had that nice orange flavor, and all the beautiful herbal notes are in there, the spice notes are in there. So then as they start to pop, they're going to release that citrusy note, that acid note's going to be in there. So it's going to be, you know, really a great, great. Michelle, are you listening?
No, I got distracted.
You distracted. This is all for you right here, huh?
This is my recipe.
It's okay, good. This is your recipe. This is my recipe. So we're going to put the berries in, and they're going to start to pop open. They're going to release all of that wonderful, wonderful flavor. And then you're going to strain it all out, and it's just mashed into this beautiful gel. The kumquats have just kind of cooked because they're just very thinly sliced, and they're going to just smooth away inside. That is the most delicious, delicious sauce. Mm. I even add a little red pepper flakes to it. Mm. Adds a little spice in it. The Zinfandel is sweet and wonderful. And, y'all, that's your recipe. It will be on the website along with the rest of them. What else do we have, Michelle? That's it.
I'm out of here.
And Dean, you have the best recipe at your upcoming Thanksgiving Day.
Thank you.
Okay, no problem at all. Y'all, we'll see you next week. Go buy some cranberries, please. See you later.